Miller. Welcome to Innovation Hub. We're looking today at hidden stories, dimensions of a situation that you thought you understood. A story that's been talked about in so many places for years is that there aren't enough women and minorities in tech. How do you get more girls interested in science? How do you get teachers to not unconsciously assume that the white kids are going to be better at math than minorities? But a listener, Chris Gamel of Cleveland, who actually has his own podcast called The Amp Hour, he wrote to me a few months ago and he said, there's another story here. This story is about the people who did get psyched about coding in seventh grade or who aced computer science in high school. This is a story about adults giving up and getting out. College kids who know their stuff, or grads on the job market, or employees who are ready for a promotion. These are people who are in super high demand because they're women or they're underrepresented minorities, and they're like, I don't care. I'm done. This is not for me. Karen Sholkoff and Kit Bradford notice this problem too. Karen started HireMoreWomenInTech.com. She's the chief product officer at Vote Run Lead. And Kit Bradford started We Are the Black Makers. He's now a research scientist at the MIT Media Lab. And Kip, let me start with you here. When do you see this fall off starting to happen?
I would say that I see a lot of attrition in college, actually. And some of that is reflective of some of the pressures going into engineering, going into tech fields. There's an economic benefit and an economic attraction. And a lot of the passion that people have for some of these fields isn't nurtured the way it could be. So I personally am somebody who has always been passionate about science and math and technology. And despite attempts to beat that out of me at various points in my professional life and education, it's never left. And I think if your motivation and your resources and your support structure aren't as robust as mine was, it's really, really easy to be discouraged by fields that are, in a lot of cases, difficult. They're challenging, but they're very rewarding.
Karen, you've seen a lot of women dropping out after they've gotten into the workplace. What do you say to a hiring manager, to an executive who says, look, I do want there to be diversity, but there's just not nearly the numbers of women applying to be in tech positions and to be leaders as there are men? So inevitably, we're going to end up with mostly men in our company and mostly men in leadership positions. And, you know, what can you do about that?
I have that conversation over and over and over again. And I felt that the problem wasn't just a one-sided, well, the women aren't there. I felt that the other part of the problem was on the company. I didn't find that these companies were actually going out to seek women. They weren't constructing their job position proposals in ways that women would be interested.
And job descriptions matter that much? Like, okay, so somebody's listening and they're like, oh my God, I didn't know I was doing this with my job description. How do I write a better job description? What do they do?
It's more about reflecting who your team is and what it is you're trying to do. And, you know, if you're putting it out there that you, you know, you guys have keg parties and, you know, your kite boarders and you got a ping pong table, like that conjures up a certain image. And just to be aware of that image, not that you necessarily need to change it. If that's who you are, fantastic. And there are probably, you know, women and people of color who are also interested in those things. But the technology sector as a whole has a bad reputation with women in general. So if you are actively trying to recruit for a more diverse staff and team, you have to set yourself apart as to why you don't play into those tropes. When I joined into, you know, the tech industry, there were some booth babes, you know, at conferences. Like,
what are booth babes for people who have not been to these conferences?
Oh, you know, like women working at a table, wearing very tight clothing, or, you know, posing for photographs with all the, you know, engineer guys and, you know, kind of sexily dressed. And it's the it's been the overarching sort of theme of like very white, heavily male dominated industry. You know, my premise is that diversity is not just better for more people getting jobs, but it's actually better for the company. There's studies that show that companies make more money if they've got women in leadership actually directing as well.
Well, I'm guessing it's kind of weird if you're a woman in tech and you go to one of these conferences and you have, and most of the women there are model types who are posing. You must feel very sort of out of the mainstream, at least in terms of the women there.
Right. And also, it doesn't reflect what the culture that I actually live in is.
We've been talking about conscious bias, but there's lots of unconscious bias. I mean, there have been many studies done in recent years that show, for example, that people are heavily influenced by names. So in some studies, researchers have sent out a whole bunch of identical job applications, but some have names that we would think of as African-American names on those applications, and some have names that seem like the applicant is probably white. And the African-American applicants do not get called back in nearly the same numbers. So I wonder, what does this say about bias in the workplace?
You bring up a very, very interesting point with the name bias. People have some perception of the capabilities and performance of women, of African-Americans. And even though they say we're an equal opportunity employer, the reality is that you take, and there have been studies of this as well. I mean, a lot of the original affirmative action laws were based on this notion that you take two equally good candidates, one's black or female and the other is white, and the promotion will go to the white candidate. And I think just looking at most contemporary companies and looking at promotion practices, it's really, really hard to find ones that don't favor Asian computer scientists or mathematicians when they're giving promotions, because there's this perception, stereotypes, whatever, that are just hard to eliminate when you're making those choices. And people will say, well, you know, yes, we've taken an equal look at these two candidates and this one is better for all these reasons, but it's not a quantitative process. So all of the qualitative things that are really bias-based tend to influence the decision-making. And I think that that's one of the things that does create a filter in the business world.
And what strikes me, too, when you look at this mountain of research showing all these unconscious biases that has sort of piled up in the last few years, is that, like, the single most interesting thing is the people who believe they are unbiased tend to be some of the most biased people, because it's being aware of the bias that helps you to kind of counteract it.
I rarely will quote George W. Bush, but
there here, we go.
But here we go. I think he said one thing that was very intelligent, which was there's this really problematic set of low expectations that we have as a society for a lot of underrepresented people in fields like tech. And I think those low expectations play both ways. They're both low expectations for students of color, for women. And there are also low expectations for employers who say, well, you know, we might have two candidates that are completely equal, but I think this one candidate's going to go further. And if you're making those decisions, whether they're conscious or unconscious, they really do bias and shift the kind of diversity that you see in these upper management roles and board of director roles.
How do you make the argument to companies, though, that this isn't just a good thing they're doing for the world? This is good for their bottom line.
Really, it's about diversity of ideas more than diversity of people. When you drill down to say, how does it change a company? How does it change the way the company exists in the environment? How does it make a company more competitive? And if you have a company where you've got a monoculture, people have had the same life experiences, there's no real good way for you to know that, hey, there are a lot of people who aren't using laptop computers. Everyone's using their cell phones because you've got laptop computer culture at your company. And everybody else, because laptop computers are a little bit more expensive, they're shifting to cell phones. So all of a sudden, your market has shrunk by 80% because you missed this profound shift in what the world is doing.
Really quickly to Kip's point that, you know, to remain competitive, companies need to have a diversity of ideas. It's so interesting because, you know, the technology sector as a whole is very invested in this idea of innovation and, you know, having innovation pipelines and diversity of ideas for products. But they have been slow to actually embody that and live that out in how they actually internally run.
Right. So I want to know finally from both of you, to what degree do you think things are changing? Are the numbers in the next 5 or 10 years going to really move in a major way? We've certainly seen the numbers of minorities and women at major tech companies when it's been reported in the last couple of years. These are tiny, tiny numbers. They are not even close to where women or underrepresented minorities are in the population at large. So, Karen, let me start with you. Is big change coming?
The optimist in me wants to say yes. I think it is changing. I think the more visibility that these issues have, the more people accept that it is not individual, it is not anecdotal, it is it is groundswell there. You know, this is a real cultural phenomenon that needs to be addressed. And yeah, I'm hopeful in the next 5 to 10 years that we're going to see dramatic changes.
Kip, what do you think we're going to see? Is a systemic change coming?
I was sitting here thinking, I really want to be an optimist about this. I really, really do.
Come with me, Kip. Come with me.
I think if the message really, really reaches boardrooms that diversity is something that has bottom line value to companies, then there will be motivation and thus change. Until that happens, I also...
That doesn't necessarily sound like motivation for the right reasons, but okay.
I agree. I don't really feel like it's motivation for the right reasons, but I'll take it. It's better than nothing. I just look at the culture in our country right now, and I think there's been a lot that's happening on the awareness front. The whole Black Lives Matter movement is something that is unprecedented and unexpected, that 20 years ago, every bit of police harassment in the Black community could just get completely swept under the rug as if it never happened. Whereas today, we actually have the ability to show, hey, look, this is something that's real, and the world should know about it because it's not what America is. This is not what freedom and liberty and the principles that this country is founded on mean and how they should be implemented.
This idea of the right reasons is a very interesting one, especially with the population that we're talking about. So it may be sort of different with a much larger company like an IBM or an Apple. But when you get into the startup communities in technology, they're often led by, you know, programmers and engineers who have a different way of looking at problems, attacking problems, solving for problems. So to be quite frank, I was not winning any hearts and minds by saying it was the right thing to do. It's that there's metrics, there's studies, and it actually does legitimately affect your bottom line. There's this idea of, you know, it's not personal, it's business, which I don't ascribe to, but many folks that are developers and engineers, it's very one or zero. It's not because it's touchy-feely, good to do. It's that it has a direct outcome.
Karen Sholkoff is Chief Product Officer at Vote Run Lead, and she's the creator of the website HireMoreWomenInTech.com. And Kip Bradford is a research scientist at the MIT Media Lab. Thank you so much to both of you. This is a great conversation.
Thank you. It's fantastic to be here, and it's a very important thing to talk about.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
If you've got thoughts on any of our segments, including diversity in tech, tweet at us. We're at iHub Radio. We're also on Facebook, and you can send us an email, innovationhub@wgbh.org. From WGBH Radio and PRI, this is Innovation Hub. Be back in a minute.